Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, October 11th, 2014. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host. As we're beginning this broadcast today, we are in a situation that was described by Lyndon LaRouche yesterday, and I'm quoting him now. We're on the verge of a total genocide of the population of the Middle East and beyond. This is about to happen within weeks, if not sooner. And he continued saying the genocide will not be limited to the Kurds in Kobane. The genocide is being perpetrated in the entire region. LaRouche concluded these remarks by stating emphatically that no peace is possible unless we crush the evil behind this by defeating the British Empire. And he added that we must begin by removing the leading puppet of that empire, U.S. President Barack Obama, by impeachment immediately. The world is watching now as the barbarians who call themselves the Islamic State are poised to seize the town of Kobane, which exists on the border of Turkey and Syria. As ISIS is moving into that town, which once had 40,000 residents, and as it's expected to murder those that they capture, the Turkish army is sitting on the other side of the border, making sure that no military aid or fighters can reach the besieged town. It should be noted as well that the Islamic State appears to be preparing for an assault on Baghdad, the capital of Iraq, where many Americans are still living. And as this is playing out in front of the American people on ad nauseum on television night after night, the U.S. Congress, under John Boehner's direction, still remains away from Washington, doing nothing to force President Obama to abide by the Constitution by going to the Congress for the authorization to fight. Now, we're told that the emergence of the Islamic State is something unexpected, that they crept up on us, that it suddenly became a big operation. But that's typical of the lies in the Western media today. Lyndon LaRouche has a long record of exposing what's behind this operation and who's involved. In particular, I would refer people back to his famous piece from 1999, Storm Over Asia, where he laid out precisely the course of events that occurred after the events of 9/11/2001. My guest on the program today has also been writing about the forces behind the war drive since especially the murder of Libya's leader Muammar al-Gaddafi nearly 3 years ago in October 2011. He has documented how Obama's allies, the self-proclaimed allies of Obama, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey in particular, followed up the coup in Libya with an escalation in Syria, which, by the way, LaRouche warned would happen the day after the murder of Gaddafi. And this is where the Islamic State comes from. So my guest on the program today is William Wirtz. Will is a longtime member of the editorial board of the Executive Intelligence Review and a leader in the operations of the LaRouche movement for over 40 years. Will, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Harley. It's good to be here.
As you know, we've been compiling a wealth of material at EIR and LaRouche PAC on the deadly, dangerous operations that have been put in motion by the British Empire. We have the next hour to review these operations, and I know you know these things very well. You've put out fact sheets and documentation on this from the 28 pages of the 9/11 report, the Libya operations, the Benghazi operation, the current escalation, and so on. But what I'd like to begin with, so that our listeners get a very clear picture from the top of what we're dealing with, I'd like you to begin with the whole explanation of why these operations have been launched. What is behind the decision of the British Empire to put us on the verge of World War III? And as you're talking about that, how do we know this? What is it about LaRouche's method that enabled us to have this picture that no one else really has?
Well, the purpose for this is to maintain political control on the part of the British Empire. And if you want to actually see the issue that's before us, you just look back at the discussions between Roosevelt and Churchill during World War II, in which Roosevelt said that that his intent in fighting World War II was to, following that war, implement American system methods of economic development, which he had carried out in the United States. Projects such as the Tennessee Valley Authority, Bonneville Power Authority, and so forth. And on the other hand, you had Churchill, who basically said that he was carrying out World War II for the purpose of preserving the British Empire. And after Roosevelt's death, progressively over decades, Roosevelt's intent was completely undermined, and the British Empire policy has had the upper hand until most recently, when you've had a number of countries throughout the world in the form of the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, which have really revived Roosevelt's intent in a commitment to economic development on a global scale. And the basic point that you have to look at is that the British Empire is an empire. It's not a republic. It's a totally different world outlook than that of our founding fathers, who correctly revolted against that empire. The purpose of the empire is to maintain its political control, and to do that, they're intent upon suppressing that which characterizes human nature uniquely in the universe, which is our creativity. And they also want to reduce the world's population because they see a growing population of individuals who develop their creativity as a threat to their political control. So they're committed to massive population reduction, genocidal population reduction, and they're committed to preventing any combination of sovereign nation states from arising that would be a threat to that political power. And that's the way you have to look at the situation we're facing right now. In the 1999 film, Storm Over Asia, what LaRouche was documenting is that the British Empire, including its agents in the United States, like Brzezinski, were committed to an arc of crisis surrounding, at that point, Russia, because the Soviet Union had collapsed. But this was the policy. And of course, this Storm Over Asia policy was a continuation of an earlier policy, which was manifested under Brzezinski, which was to develop the Afghan resistance to the then Soviet Union. And it was at that point that the United States became involved with others, especially the British, in fostering what later became Al-Qaeda.
I think at the time we were calling this the Islamic fundamentalist card, which was being deployed as part of this arc of crisis policy.
Right. And so what we're facing today is really the continuation of that same policy, which accelerated after 9/11. And obviously involved the invasion of Iraq, where there was no Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda did not exist under Saddam Hussein. And now what do we have? We have ISIS in control of a large portion of Iraq, threatening to, I mean, they're within artillery range of the international airport in Baghdad at this point, despite all of the bombings that have taken place. They're also in a very significant position in Syria, on the verge of taking over this Kurdish city, Kobani, and carrying out a genocide against those Kurds who still remain in that city. So they, as of yesterday, they were in control of 40 to 50% of the city, including the administrative center of the city. So their takeover of that city and a genocide against the Kurds who are trapped there is imminent. And And this, but this is a deliberate policy as of the British Empire and its allies, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates, all of whom were in bed with the British and with Obama and the overthrow of Gaddafi. And the overthrow of Gaddafi was meant as a step towards the overthrow of Assad, and then after that, regime change in Iran. That was the intent, and that's what we're seeing right before us. So this is an evil policy, an anti-human policy, which at least two administrations have been complicit in, the George W. Bush Cheney administration and now the Obama administration.
And Will, I want to get to the question of the Saudis right off the bat. You brought this up. The Saudi alliance actually goes back to the George Herbert Walker Bush as vice president, when the CIA launched these operations in Afghanistan with the so-called Mujahideen, in alliance with Saudi Arabia. And I think this is something which should be known by most people, but one of the keys to unlocking this is the Senate Intelligence Committee report on 9/11. And we're having an event today in New York City, in Manhattan, which is featuring statements from a congressman, from one of the leaders of the families of the 9/11 victims, to bring this to the forefront. But I think it's important that we lay out this whole question of the Saudis, because they've been in this every step of the way. So what do you have anything new on the fight around the 28 pages? Where does that stand, the release of these documents?
Well, just, as people know, there's a 28-page chapter in the congressional inquiry into 9/11. Which was classified by Bush to protect the Saudis. What it apparently goes into, from all indications, is the role of Saudi Arabia in particular in financing and sponsoring the 9/11 terrorists, 15 out of the 19 of whom were Saudi citizens. So that's been suppressed. Obama promised the family members of the victims that he would release it. He has not released it. And a bipartisan group of congressmen, Walter Jones is Republican, Stephen Lynch, who's a Democrat, have been fighting to declassify these 28 pages. This is particularly important because right now, what do we have? We have Saudi Arabia directly involved in having created ISIS and al-Nusra, just as they created al-Qaeda in the first place. And of course, the former prime minister of Iraq, Maliki, who was essentially removed from office by the United States in campaigning for elections there earlier this year, made the point that it is Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, and Turkey that have been the sponsors and creators of ISIS. And then you have the phenomenon of Obama and Kerry, John Kerry, Secretary of State, basing their anti-ISIS policy upon the perpetrators of and creators of ISIS and al-Nusra, which is why this policy doesn't function in the first place. What they have consciously rejected is a policy of uniting with the Assad government of Syria, with Iran, with Russia, and other nations globally against ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, and any other variant of this Wahhabite ideology. This Wahhabite Islamic version comes from Saudi Arabia. So this is so right now this is the crucial fight. And of course, you had not only Maliki, you had Joe Biden say that our biggest problem is that these countries, our allies, are the ones who created ISIS, and even now their intent in this so-called coalition of the willing, which is really a coalition of the unwilling. Their intent is to try to use this in order to force the overthrow of Assad. They're not intent upon destroying ISIS whatsoever.
Well, we see this with the role of the Turks, who have insisted they will do nothing unless the policy is to get Assad.
Exactly. And what I said earlier in terms of the connection between Libya and the campaign to overthrow Assad is crucial. What most people don't know is that in the campaign to overthrow Gaddafi, NATO handed over the Benghazi airport to Turkey to administer, which meant that Turkey was in a position to allow flights with weapons from Qatar, the UAE, to come into Libya in violation of the UN arms embargo, and to place those weapons in the hands of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, which is an affiliate of Al-Qaeda. And there was a report that was put out by the Library of Congress in August of 2012. It's entitled Libya, let's see, Al-Qaeda in Libya, a profile. And what they point out is that the vast majority of foreign fighters who joined Al-Qaeda in Iraq came from Libya, and that the bulk of them came from Benghazi and the city of Derna, which is where all of the jihadists that Obama allied with were based in the campaign to overthrow Gaddafi. So the point here is that the U.S., it's not just Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, and Turkey that are involved in supporting ISIS. This was a deliberate policy carried out by the Obama administration to facilitate the arming of ISIS and al-Nusra from the beginning, because once they flew weapons in to Libya in violation of the UN embargo to arm al-Qaeda in Libya against Gaddafi, then they flew weapons out of Libya to Turkey to arm the ISIS and al-Nusra in Syria. So this is one policy of perpetual warfare in which not only Obama's allies, but the Obama administration itself were deeply involved and continue to be involved. So the point is, this is what happened with ISIS. The emergence of ISIS is not a surprise, as some people go around saying. It was Obama said it was an underestimation of their strength and so forth. This is a deliberate policy which goes back to the creation of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, the storm over Asia, as LaRouche pointed out in 1999, 15 years earlier than today. This included the invasion of Iraq, the invasion of Afghanistan, the drone campaign that's been carried out, the illegal invasion and murder of Libya and murder of Gaddafi, and the illegal campaign against Assad in Syria. And we're continuing to engage in violation of international law and our own constitution. Even in the air campaign that were carried out, which air campaign is completely ineffective. And well, one would almost have to say that it was purposely ineffective.
Let's go back to a couple of these points that I think I just want to hit with a real hammer so people get this picture. What you just said is a very powerful indictment of the Obama administration. Going back to this question of Turkey being handed over the control of the Benghazi airport, I assume this is something that's known to members of Congress.
Well, I made it known to members of Congress. I've sent it out to a very large number of members of Congress, and we've published this. This fact was published in a Turkish newspaper called Today's Zaman. The title of the article is "Turkey Will Run Benghazi Airport." And
it's kind of unambiguous.
Yeah, that's what it says. So this was under Erdogan, the current president of Turkey. We also know that as soon as Gaddafi was killed, the head of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group went to Turkey to meet with the Syrian opposition. I mean, the U.S. had to know about this because he was head of the, he was commander of the Tripoli military council, which was responsible for the security for foreign embassies in Tripoli at the time. And then after that, his deputy commander of the Tripoli military council, a guy named Al-Harati, left with 600 terrorists to go to Syria to work on the overthrow of Assad. And then we have the evidence that weapons were being shipped by not only by ship, but also by plane to Turkey. So this is something, again, in violation of the UN arms embargo. And this is something which cannot happen without the United States knowing this. In fact, what has been, the UN put a report out on this. This is well known. It's documented by the UN. And what the UN said is that there's a U.S. company, Jeppesen, based in Colorado, which provided all of the navigational assistance to the very planes that were carrying out these weapons transfers to Turkey and then to Syria. What is Jeppesen? Well, it just happens to be the case that Jeppesen also was involved in the earlier renditions under George W. Bush and Cheney. So they have a rather well-known history, and their name appears in the UN report. And the UN report says that they refused to give information. The UN report also says that Saudi Arabia refused to give information. So all of this is known. So you have to ask yourself, it's just an what are our congressmen? I mean, who are they who
Well,
could represent?
let's get to another part that's known that'll make the same point, which is that it was known to the House and the Senate that Obama's policy in Libya was a violation of the Constitution and the War Powers Act, and that Obama lied about what we were going to do, and he was protected by McCain and Kerry. And I'd like you to just develop that point, because to talk about impeachment, there are so many unconstitutional aspects of this situation, literally treason against the United States. And this is one which comes up now because the Congress is again giving Obama a free rein to do whatever he wants. So
Yeah,
let's hit at this question of the Constitution.
Well, exactly. The point of the matter is that the Constitution stipulates under Article 1 that it is only the Congress that can declare war, authorize war, not the president. This was the specific intent of the founding fathers. And in the case of Libya, John McCain and John Kerry prevented this issue from being raised, and thus allowed Obama to carry out the fraud, the illegal war that he was perpetrated against the Libyan government, which had been collaborating with the United States against Al Qaeda. So we actually allied with Al Qaeda against a government which had been working with us against Al Qaeda. That's under Barack Obama. And so that's the first point. And I mean, an assassination of the head of a government is also a rather atrocious crime. And then you look at what's going on in Libya today. There is no government in Libya today. There are two governments. There's an Islamic government which controls Tripoli and Benghazi. And then there's a newly elected House of Representatives, which is in internal exile within Libya in a town called Tobruk on the border with Egypt. It's 1,000 miles away from the capital city of Tripoli. And you've got, and who are these Islamicists? Well, they're Belhaj, that it's Wissam bin Hamid, a head of Libya's Shield, who was the he was the guy who escorted the FBI around Benghazi when the FBI went there to investigate the murder of Chris Stevens and the others. You know, these are the people who are now controlling Libya. This guy Wissam bin Hamid, who worked directly with, he actually met with U.S. officials before Chris Stevens' trip to Benghazi, And he's described as the head of Al-Qaeda. He is a guy who fought in Iraq against the United States forces. This is who Obama allied with. This is the kind of personnel. So that's the reality of the situation in terms of the breaking the law there. And in the current case, again, the Congress is, I mean, first of all, you've got Boehner, who is the biggest defender of Obama and is refusing to allow any debate or vote until sometime in January, in total violation of the Constitution. And then you've got the rest of the Congress who are gutless. They should be demanding that the Congress reconvene immediately and that there be a debate on this, on authorization of such a war, on declaration of such a war. But even more importantly, they should come back, reconvene, in order to impeach Obama. Because the fact of the matter is he's already broken the law. And that's the issue. And I think if you go back to what Harley started out with, which is Lynn LaRouche's comments from last night, we're on the verge of a genocide. And this genocide is not going to be limited to the Kurds in Kobani. And remember, we just had, I mean, there are mass graves that have been found outside of Donetsk in Ukraine of Ukrainian citizens who were shot in the back of the head by the Nazis of the right sector and the Svoboda Party and who are in the National Guard of Ukraine, who this president helped bring to power. So, you know, this is what we're dealing with, and this has the potential of exploding throughout the Middle East. What happens if ISIS starts firing on Baghdad in the international airport, which is the way in which the U.S. embassy and other embassies are supplied through that airport? That's imminent. So, I think people have to realize that as Lynn LaRouche said last night, we have to defeat and crush the British Empire, but the best way, to move on that, he said the most convenient way, is get Obama out of office right now. And, the violations of the Constitution, the violations of international law. There is no UN Security Council resolution to support airstrikes within Syria. None whatsoever.
You're listening to Will Wirtz on the LaRouche Show today, October 11th, 2014. We're reviewing this extremely dangerous situation. And the one thing which people can do, which is to join with us in demanding that Congress come back and impeach Obama. Now, Will, one of the powerful tools that we have is the fact sheet that you prepared on Benghazi. And there is an ongoing special committee of the Congress which seems to be taking a lot of time to pull together things that you've already pulled together. Just review a little bit. You've covered some of it, but what's in that fact sheet that really does give the evidence? Let me make one other point before you get to that, that you have all these defenders of the Republican Party who are saying that, well, we can't go for impeachment because we don't have the votes. We don't have enough Republicans in the Senate to convict Obama. And my point to them has always been, bring the case forward. Let's see whether Democrats in the Senate would defend Obama once the evidence is there of these crimes. And I think the fact sheet that you put together is a very important tool for making that case.
Well, the basic point of the fact sheet, which was based entirely on publicly available sources, is that the entire operation in Benghazi was an inside-outside job. It said that the attacking force was Ansar al-Sharia. You also had the February 17th Martyrs Brigade hired to provide security for the mission and for the CIA annex, if that were necessary. You also had Libya's Shield, which as I said, not only escorted the FBI around after Benghazi, but also what they did the night of Benghazi when reinforcements came from Tripoli, U.S. reinforcements. They were, Libya Shield delayed them at the Benghazi airport from leaving the airport to go to the CIA mission to relieve them. And then accompanied them to the CIA annex, at which point the shooting, the mortar fire began. So what's the story? The story is that all three of these organizations were in on the attack on the embassy. For instance, it's later became known that Ansar al-Sharia they're on the payroll of the Libyan government, and they received their remuneration through the February 17th Brigade. So the organization that carried out the attack was being paid by the Libyan government through the organization which was hired by the United States to guard the mission. So that's the kind of situation you have there. Now, all three of these organizations are currently in the Benghazi Revolutionary Shura Council. They're the key organizations. And they were just recently listed by a U.S. private intelligence company called, I think it's called Intel Center, as the eighth most dangerous terrorist organization in the world today. Actually listed one ahead of al-Nusra. So the reality of the matter is Benghazi was carried out, but and all of these groups were the allies of Obama in overthrowing Gaddafi. So, you know, that's what you have to look at. I mean, the problem is that you have these people who get all excited because three CIA contractors who were in Benghazi say that they were told to stand down three times by the CIA director at the CIA annex. Now, that, you know, that's useful information, and that it's good that that came out because, of course, U.S. authorities denied that it ever happened. However, that's really not the issue. The issue is what's the policy, which is a continuing policy. It's continuing now in respect to Iraq, in respect to Syria, in respect to Libya. So that's the issue. So you have to go after the policy. And the fact of the matter is Obama is impeachable for this policy now.
Yeah.
And the committee, the select committee, it's hard to say what they're doing. Trey Gowdy seems to be so intent upon getting the collaboration of Elijah Cummings and the Democrats that it's not clear what he's doing. He basically argues that he's doing he doesn't want to use hearings because they're not all that effective, which may very well be the case, and that they're basically interviewing people, but there's no way that we can tell what interviews they're conducting or what is actually emerging from this investigation. So that, you know, the problem is we're faced with a global crisis now, and clearly that investigation is not going on a timescale which is commensurate with the actual danger to humanity, as we see it right now.
Well, we also have the evidence that Boehner, as you pointed out, is not calling the Congress back in, and secondly, Boehner's approach to this is to sue the president and take impeachment off the table, the same way Nancy Pelosi took impeachment of Bush off the table. So, you know, we come back constantly to the same thing, that the policy is clear. Obama's complicity, his leadership in pushing this policy is also clear. But we run up against this problem in the Congress. But I think what Lyndon LaRouche has been emphasizing recently is it goes beyond the Congress. It's really the American people who have been stupefied and dumbed down, who don't get these things. Now, in the last days with this reemergence of ISIS, there was I think you probably saw this, Will, there was a poll that came out that said 3 out of 4 Americans want the Congress to come back in session. Did you see that poll?
Yeah, it's like 78% wanted the Congress to reconvene. Only 16% wanted them to stay in their districts campaigning. So disgusted are they with them.
Well, that actually demonstrates that even though the population is stupefied, they at least have a sense that there is some recourse to address this. But this is where the question of leadership comes in. Now, as far as that's concerned, we've seen in the last days the LaRouche movement intervening at the IMF World Bank meeting. There was a webcast last night, which Mr. LaRouche did not directly participate in, but in which these issues were presented very clearly and forcefully. What I think is crucial is that people who are listening to this discussion need to start tomorrow taking action. You know, get your friends to listen to the webcast, to take this discussion here on the LaRouche show and get people to listen to that. Now, just to add to this then, let's come back to this Syria situation, because the other thing that Mr. LaRouche said after the murder of Gaddafi is that it was not just an attack on Assad, but this is an attack on Russia, ultimately. And I think with the Ukraine situation added in, what we are seeing is an emergence of a real fight between two different blocks of nations, one of which is collapsing, namely the transatlantic nations, including the United States, the other which is on the rise, the BRICS. And I'd like you to just give an update on this, the potential that exists now as a counterpole if we were to pull the United States out from under Obama and the British Empire.
Well, I think that, as I said in the beginning, the intent of the British Empire is to prevent, to attempt to prevent any combination of sovereign nation states committed to principles of economic development from emerging on this planet. And what you have is a number of organizations which are now coalescing, which represent the vast majority of humanity, which no longer are willing to tolerate the IMF, the World Bank, and implicitly the British Empire. This includes the BRICS, which we discussed earlier, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Russia has just joined with Belarus and Kazakhstan to form the Eurasian Economic Union, and a number of other countries, including Armenia, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, are in the process of joining that as well. So you've got, and these countries, are joined by others, including Egypt, Argentina, which are in, and even in Mexico, on our southern border, you have Mexico moving in the direction of development projects in Mexico in collaboration with China. Contrast that to the slave labor, facilities that under NAFTA have operated in Mexico, where there's no development, there's just exploitation of cheap labor. What is China doing instead? And what should the United States be doing? They're actually building high-speed rail in Mexico, uniting ports on the Gulf of Mexico and on the Pacific coast of Mexico through what's called a dry canal, right, which is a train, since they're not in a position to build an actual canal from the standpoint of water. So this grouping has emerged, and it goes beyond the question of the individual nations. They're operating on the principle of a community of nations, of sovereign nations, and the principle is a commitment to development. This is what Modi developed when he was in the United States. He said, Gandhi developed a movement for freedom. What I'm calling for now is a movement for development, which is something that Martin Luther King would have also welcomed. So the British are intent to prevent this from actually succeeding and becoming the dominant factor within the world, which means their demise. And that's really what was the issue this last few days in Washington, D.C., where you had the IMF, the World Bank meeting, and we put out a leaflet which was entitled A Life and Death Choice Between Two Systems. One is a dying system, the IMF, the World Bank, the British Empire. The other is a system which is vibrant, which is committed to the future, which is committed to mining helium on the moon to fuel fusion power, as opposed to solar panels and windmills, which is the Queen of England's preference as well as Obama's. This, you know, so that's the choice between us right now. And this combination of nations, if the United States joined with them, would be sufficient to destroy the British Empire once and for all. And remember, LaRouche had originally, before the BRICS emerged, had the concept of four powers, where the United States would join with Russia, China, and India to defeat the British Empire. And unfortunately, under Obama, you know, that has not been the case. So the BRICS have been forced to emerge without the collaboration of the United States. Our job is to get the United States to return to its true Republican identity, as Helga Zepp LaRouche has emphasized, and work with India, China, and Russia to defeat the British Empire. So, I mean, that's our actual identity as a nation. Unfortunately, most Americans have been brainwashed by the press. There was a very interesting expose that just came out from a former writer for the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung in Germany. Right. And what he exposed is that all of the press are actually covers for intelligence agencies. He admitted that he had worked for the CIA for decades. So you ask yourself when you watch CNN or Fox News, you know, why is it that the news is so controlled? Well, it's controlled because they're controlled by intelligence agents. That's what's going on in the United States of America. That's why so many Americans are brainwashed and are clueless as to what the actual issues are. And, you know, the basic point here is that Americans have got to muster in themselves the courage and the intelligence to join with us in bringing the United States into this new geometry which is emerging as against our historic enemy, the British Empire. And that means getting Obama out of office immediately. That is the only way that would pull the plug on the British Empire right now. And it may be that we have to oust Boehner first to get to Obama. But that's what we should do. And it's absolutely urgent if we're going to avoid a spreading genocide, not only in the Middle East, but beyond.
Well, the other thing that we're seeing emerge politically in the United States has been a Democratic opposition to Obama, which, you know, you might say Biden's statement about how we're allying with the creators of ISIS was a part of that. Panetta's book, where Panetta portrays Obama as detached and uncaring and making mistakes. Panetta was his defense secretary and CIA director. You also have in five or six or seven states, U.S. senators, Democrats, who are endangered in their reelection campaigns, who are telling Obama, stay the hell out of my state. So I think we're seeing the potential for that shift. But it's still, I might add, former President Jimmy Carter saying that Obama's policy on drones, of being able to murder Americans without due process, as has already taken place in the case of al-Awlaki, that this is unconstitutional. So it seems to me we're beginning to see that shift, but it's taking place way too slowly, especially given what's happening in the Middle East right now.
The problem is that you have a certain shift, but it's still operating within, you know, within self-imposed limits. You have people who will oppose the drone policy, people who want to release the torture report that the Senate has produced. You know, people who think yes, the Congress should vote on the war authorization. So they raise these various issues, which are not wrong, but what they fail to do is to go beyond party politics and just say, listen, Obama has to be removed. He's the author of all of these policies on behalf of the British Empire, and we have to actually restore our Constitution, which is not just questions of who is supposed to declare war on the Congress or whether the president can act unilaterally. But it's also our Constitution has to do with an economics system, which is oriented towards promotion of the general welfare. So, you know, which is why we had a Secretary of Treasury, Alexander Hamilton, who fostered manufacturing. Why Lincoln fought for the greenback policy for the Continental Railroads. Where are we building railroads like was done after the Civil War, and like other nations are doing right now? Where are we building? When was the last time a U.S. company built a nuclear power plant? When was the last time that we went to the moon, and had any perspective in terms of mining the moon for humanity?
We don't even have rockets to send our astronauts up to the space station anymore.
So, you know, the point is that we've abandoned under this dictatorship, which has existed, the financial dictatorship. That's what the British Empire is today. It's a financial dictatorship. It's mediated through central banks like the Federal Reserve and through Wall Street, the City of London, vulture funds. The point is that we have to return to a policy of economic development, what Modi called for, a mass movement for economic development. And that was the direction in which Martin Luther King was heading in terms of equal opportunity in this country. That was what Kennedy was committed to. And we haven't had that since Kennedy's assassination. So that is what we have to regain in this country. And I think people have to realize that other countries have gone through periods of what would essentially be an internal dark age. I mean, look at China. They went through the Cultural Revolution of Mao, in which if you wore glasses, you'd basically be suspect of being an intellectual, and be submitted to mob methods of intimidation. You can look at any number of countries, I mean, you know, that have gone through horrible periods of internal dictatorship. And yet, you know, look at what happened to China. They've actually emerged from that, and they have a commitment to developing their people and to offering the benefits of their own creativity to other people throughout the world. That's what we used to do. That, in a certain sense, was the purpose of our revolution. We no longer do that. We are opposed to, we actually opposed under successive administrations since the Kennedy assassination, to one degree or another, we oppose economic development. We back the IMF and the World Bank. Obama backs vulture funds. We insist that you have to only, there can be no large projects. Large projects are bad. I mean, we wouldn't even have built the Tennessee Valley Authority or any of these large projects if the mentality which exists today were dominant during the 1930s, and we would never have gotten out of the Depression, and we would never have won World War II. So,
Will, let me ask you about the other issue, which really exposes the genocidal intent of the current regimes in the transatlantic, which is the outbreak of Ebola in Africa, and now it's spread, and the fact that no government had taken this on, that they had essentially treated it as a local issue to be dealt with by countries that are bankrupt and can't deal with it. Where do we stand with that now?
Well, this is, it's out of control. It's a further reflection of the takedown, and particularly in the transatlantic area, Europe, United States, of health services, of industry, the failure to actually develop Africa, but rather to leave it in the hands of the legacy of British and other European colonialisms. This is spreading. You've got, and actually we have three viruses which are spreading right now. We also have this enterovirus in the United States. We have a chikungunya virus, which is carried by mosquitoes and other insects in Ibero-America. So you have now cases of I mean, what was being discussed this morning is in Spain, where you had this nurse who came down with Ebola. They had taken down their medical facilities under the influence of the European Union economic policy, and they just don't have the capacity to do what's necessary. You have, and they don't even have the nursing personnel to deal with this. You just had a man who traveled from the United Kingdom to Macedonia and died of Ebola in Macedonia. So which means that he had never been in Africa, so he may have contracted this in the UK, and so who knows what the consequences are there. And similarly in Macedonia, you have a person isolated now in Brazil. You have the head of the Southern Command, U.S. Military Command, warns that if this ever hits Haiti, Central America, all hell is going to break out. So the Russians on Friday submitted a plan to the United Nations. Unfortunately, all we know is that they submitted a plan. We don't know the contents of it. But the point is, we need an international effort. It's just like the fight against terrorism. Helga Zeplerush put forward just recently a proposal for a new security architecture. The only way you can deal with ISIS and Al-Qaeda is not by working through their creators in the Middle East, but by working with the international community, including Russia, including Syria, including Iran. That's the only way to defeat this. Think of what progress we made when over the Syrian chemical weapons when the United States worked with Russia. Think of the fact that we've avoided war with Iran because of Russia's mediation. This is the kind of thing that we have to be thinking about in terms of the fight against terrorism, as well as in regard to the fight against such viral diseases, you know, which remember, I mean, this is like the Black Death. That's what you're potentially seeing, the Black Death once again, which wiped out half of the population of Europe back in the 1300s. So, you know, you need this kind of collaboration. You need what John Quincy Adams called a principle of, you know, basically a community of principle among sovereign nation states. That is the only way to go. Not the lawlessness which has characterized U.S. foreign policy under Obama and previously, I mean, under Bush and Cheney. Obama's just taken the lawlessness to a higher level. That will not solve humanity's problems. It will result in total destruction, which actually is the intention of the British Empire and maybe Obama's.
Well, we're seeing that, I think, in the discussion earlier this week, Mr. LaRouche was pointing out that you have now al-Nusra fighting in Lebanon. This is spreading throughout the whole region. Where are we going to be come this next week? I mean, obviously, it appears as though Kobani is destined to fall because no one's moving to stop it. The air campaign is hopeless for this, and there are no boots on the ground. So where does it look like this is heading in the next days and weeks, except for the genocide LaRouche is talking about? I'm assuming we're not going to see any change in U.S. policy with the Congress out of session. So this is a moment of decision for the American people. And again, if you could just sort of summarize, we're near the end of the program. If someone were to go to their congressman to talk to them, what would be the lunge in getting a congressman to take responsibility?
Well, one thing I would suggest, this was suggested earlier today by Lyndon LaRouche and Helga Zeplerush, is get them to watch the webcast that was produced last night, which featured excerpts from the storm over Asia and also excerpts from comments made by former Mexican President Lopez Portillo. Who urged the world to listen to the wisdom of Lyndon LaRouche. There's, in a certain sense, what LaRouche said last night is that we need to make a miracle. And the basic point to be made to congressmen is that they have got to act with with courage to prevent a catastrophe, not only for the United States, but for humanity, that Obama has to be removed from office now. And that means that probably they need to remove Boehner immediately. And they have to come out and speak on this. There's no reason that congressmen can't even, not only communicate to other congressmen to this purpose, but they can also hold joint press conferences demanding that this actually occur. I mean, that's one of the disgusting things, is that in the last days, as Kobani is about to fall, there have been no voices, united voices, coalescing to call for Congress to immediately reconvene and to remove Obama from office, let alone to address this immediate situation. And I think the other point is that they have got to realize that Russia and China, and all the people that the media say are our enemies, Russia, China, Syria, Assad, yes, Assad, Iran, absolutely Iran. These countries are critical to humanity at this point, and they are critical allies of the United States, despite what people may think. And that's what has to be done. So instead of continuing to demonize other nations in a manner which is self-destructive to ourselves, we need collaboration. And that's, and they've got to take responsibility for that. And they've got to stop hiding. They've got to stand up and be leaders. Where is the American leader outside of Lyndon LaRouche like Modi? Like Putin, or like Xi of China? Or Christina Kirchner? Where's the al-Sisi of Egypt who fought against the Muslim Brotherhood, who Obama put in power in Egypt, and is now providing jobs for young people by creating a second Suez Canal? This is what we need. We need congressmen who will tell the truth and fight for the truth. We don't have that right now, and that's what stands between a descent into hell for humanity, and a beautiful future.
Well, for our listeners who have been hearing you now for the last 53 minutes or 55 minutes, I think it's clear that on the one side, you have this British Empire committed to war, committed to chaos, with Obama in the key position as president. And you have on the other side an emergence of a coalition of governments that are literally calling for the United States to return to our tradition. And that's the voice that's needed in this country. Americans who insist that the United States return to the tradition of our founding fathers, of our Constitution, and become collaborators. As Lyndon LaRouche mentioned yesterday, all of the Bureau of America is ready to go if the United States were to do this. So, Will, I'd like to thank you for joining us. I would make one other point here, which is that we will be producing in the next couple of weeks a special report on the New Silk Road, which will include a lot of this material that you've covered today on the emergence of the BRICS. And our listeners should make sure to call your local office and order this report right away. It's the report on the New Silk Road. I believe it's $250. But this is something that will give you the handbook for reviving the United States. So, Will, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
And we'll probably call you back again, because I don't see this situation clearing up in the very near future. And for our listeners, go to the webcast, the LaRouchePact.com website, to listen to the webcast from last night, the weekly Friday webcast. And then also, I'm sure at some point we'll be posting this extraordinary town meeting that's taking place now in Harlem, in Manhattan, on the 28 pages and the expose of the Saudis. So until next week, this will be the end of the LaRouche Show. Join us again 3 p.m. Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time next week.